Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers.
Hi, today we're starting a podcast series about real time. And I'm Gene Sally, and I'm here with Maciej Halasz.
Hello.
And we have a couple podcasts planned out just to talk about this topic. We get a lot of questions that come in from our customers and prospects and other folks out there in the embedded world about real time. And so when we wanted to start out to talk about the topic, we're going to touch on the meta issues behind real time, things like people's perception about real time, what it is and what they think it is and why they think it's important to them. We're going to hit on some terminology. There's a lot of technical words that have disguised themselves as plain English that deal with real time. And we're going to get into some misunderstandings that usually arises out of the misinterpretation of those regular English words that mean special things to folks that do real time. And if we have time at the end of today's webinar, podcast. I'm sorry, I've been doing webinars a lot. At the end of today's podcast, we'll also talk about some of the changes that happened in the Linux kernel to implement some of the real time concepts that we're going to talk about.
Yes, so this is actually a very nice laid out agenda for today's podcast.
Well, but we planned 5 minutes before.
We planned for 5 minutes, right? But as you said, we see a lot of interest today in real time in Linux, and I'm kind of like making the quotes on quotes around real time because there's again a perception issue and there's a needs issue, but nevertheless. There's a lot of development going on around real-time area of Linux kernel, and because this is such a large topic, I mean, we can talk about it for at least a couple of hours.
Easily.
We've decided to divide that into several sections. So
sure.
We plan on touching upon some other topics next time. Primarily, we're probably going to talk about what are the new enhancements in the latest Linux kernels and how they do apply to what you customers, our listeners, are trying to do with the Linux kernel. But hopefully today's podcast is going to provide that baseline for the next one.
Sure. Well, I guess let's start out and get let's at least decide on the word. I wouldn't call it cracking a myth or a misunderstanding, but it is important to get right out there. Real time doesn't mean fast. It doesn't mean as it happens. It doesn't mean high throughput. When you talk about real time systems, real time means predictable, and that is a common misconception because people have certain throughput requirements from their system. They come to us or to other vendors and they look for something that's real-time, when that's probably not really what they want.
Right. So, in other words, real-time does not mean fast. Real-time means, as you said, something that executes in a very predictable way. So we can probably speak about specific application or an example where you have, let's say, a control application in some sort of factory that controls a robot. Mm-hmm. What you want to have, the functionality that you want to get out of real-time Linux would be more of how accurately the robot's arm is moving to a specific location on time rather than how fast that arm is moving, mm-hmm. right? And I think that there are different...
Well, I didn't understand that.
You did not?
No.
Okay. Well, you
I'm
did.
I'm trying.
But
see, I wrote off the script for the beginning part that talked about what the definition of real time was. But
well, that's the beauty of podcasts. We get to talk about stuff. But I think that one division in terminology that I would like to make here is something that we noticed and heard from, of course, both professionals in the real time space, but also customers that are new to real time. Mm-hmm. The division to soft real time and hard real time.
Oh yeah.
And that's a big kind of point because I think that most of the applications that customers design today fall into a soft real-time bucket, if at all. And on that note, since we're already talking about soft and hard real-time, I don't think that Linux can be, well, I know that Linux cannot be classified as hard real time. It can be.
Well, one of the things you let by is I'll hold your feet to the fire for this one, but
go for it.
You snuck in technical terms there. So soft real time means exactly what?
Okay, so soft real time means that application is going to perform to its best possible case, best effort, in other words, right? There's no guarantee that a specific task is going to complete every single instance at a particular deadline.
Okay.
There are so many variables inside the Linux kernel as an operating system, which is today, as everybody probably knows, pretty large, I mean, functionality-wise, and there are a lot of mechanisms that are executing during normal operation that those different mechanisms have influence on end-user application. That's precisely what real-time patches and enhancements to Linux kernel try to control better, and provide that control to end-user. Nevertheless, that's not a guarantee, hard guarantee, that a specific task, thread, application is going to reliably execute at a specific interval or as, well, designed by an engineer. So on the other hand, the hard real-time, just to contrast, compare, is really a guaranteed worst-case scenario. So this kind of approach, perspective, is used in applications that are, well, critical to a person's life, health, heart monitors, airplanes, most likely.
Yeah.
But again, as far as Linux is concerned, hard real time does not apply.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Do you agree?
No. I agree completely. That's a perfect definition there. Because you're right. I mean, if you're running your robot arm and it misses a deadline, you can always make up for it in the next cycle. As long as anything safety critical could happen, you still have adjustment time. But if you're running the robot that's adjusting the wings on an airplane, there really isn't another interval for you to make it.
Right.
So,
absolutely. So if you get one car out of a batch of 1,000 that does not run well, that's acceptable. Whereas if the heart monitor stops because of missed deadline, and a patient dies, well, consequences are great, right?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, there's life and limb involved at that point, too. Well, the other little terminology bit that we get all the time is latency. And that's, latency is almost like, speaking of cars, the word latency is almost like the word car, right?
Okay.
Because it has so many different potential meanings, right?
Right.
It encapsulates so many different ideas because there's so many different kinds of latency.
Right.
And it's really interesting because, again, you have, I sort of feel bad. I don't sort of feel bad. I actually feel bad, right? Because people will call in and they will be so confused because they've dealt with n many number of vendors with n many number of agendas to push, which have their own definition of latency. And it's sometimes I don't think it really even helps. I think these vendors don't really care too much about helping the user understand what latency is, but they put some number in front of them and say, we have the lowest latency something
right.
for a certain type of activity, and therefore we're better.
Exactly, and I think that a lot of customers, well, when they look at the kernel and they have a perception that they require real-time, they look at latency
as a measure of
real-timeness. Exactly. Yep. So let's try to tackle that topic for a second now, and let's talk about different types of latencies that really do exist in the Linux kernel. We cannot mention all of the latencies possible, but the most important ones are...
But latency in general, let's pretend like Linux kernel didn't exist.
Okay.
But latency in general is the time distance, between when you expect something to happen and when it actually happens. Is that a valid definition?
It's a perfect
definition. Okay, I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing. Because, the same concept applies to n many number of operating systems or concepts and whatever else. But so I just want to lay the groundwork there and just say that's what latency means.
Well, and in our world where time actually moves forward,
yeah, you haven't been antique shopping with your wife. Well, time stops there. Don't tell you right now.
Well, but you cannot have a system where you have zero latency.
Okay.
There's always some sort of latency, but you can always minimize them. And even the measuring of timestamp takes time. So that introduces an overhead that itself drives latency. But let's talk about a couple of primary latencies that we know of or are the most commonly mentioned or talked about. So there's an interrupt latency.
Okay.
Interrupt latency, scheduler latency.
Oh my god.
And more than a Linux kernel latency.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So I would like to put on table those three, and let's talk about those three first.
Sure.
So interrupt latency, right? That's the time interval, according to your definition, mm-hmm. from when an interrupt is raised till when the interrupt service routine starts running.
Oh, wait a second. So precisely, interrupt is raised means so whenever the hardware, so whenever some hardware device raises a, you know, raises the power level on a certain line,
yeah.
right? So a line comes up and says, okay, I'm now powered, and I represent an interrupt has occurred. That is, you're measuring this is between when that line goes active and whenever a call comes into the kernel, or whenever a call is handled by the kernel?
Whenever call, well, so you can measure the two, both numbers.
Okay.
The procedure would be different, right? Because if you measure the latency from when the signal is raised on the line and when the kernel starts running, you do that with other hardware like oscilloscopes or some sort of device that can measure time intervals,
yeah.
right? Between consecutive peaks on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
The latency that you can measure in a Linux kernel is really from when the interrupt is raised
okay.
inside the kernel
okay.
till when the interrupt service routine starts running.
Okay. And then when you mean interrupt service routine, I think in Linux, and this at least in 2.6, I might be back in 2.4 land, right? There's it differentiates between what they call the top half and the bottom half of the interrupt handler, which is probably worth talking about a little bit just to understand the latency concept. Because there are differences with respect to what's considered how unsoft your soft real-time system is. But in there, you can introduce some latencies, and you can also really screw up your system timing depending upon how you do your interrupt handling.
Well, so it's a good point, but I think that the latency touches, again, that just shows how complex that topic is, but latency touches the time interval when the interrupt is raised till when the interrupt service routine is starting to run.
Okay.
How it is executing, that is going to drive the execution of an actual interrupt. But
okay.
And that, as you said, can be executed in bottom half, can be executed as a dedicated kernel thread, or can be executed within the context of a hard interrupt itself.
Okay.
The difference is going to be, again, a trade-off of performance, meaning throughput, versus control, being able to control other threads.
Yeah, got it.
Wow, that one was a tough one. Well, because there are so many different angles that you can look at it, right?
And I guess the other important part, I get this from poor folks all the time that have been through the real-time mill, whatever you want to call it. They look at the lowest latency number. And it's really curious because in a real-time system, the lowest latency number is as uninteresting as the highest latency number.
Right.
It really isn't a gauge. Neither one tells you about the predictability of the system. And remember, real-time is about predictable performance, not fast performance. So users will come in and say, hey, this interrupt latency is pick some number microseconds. And therefore, this is better than some other interrupt latency that is pick some other minimum number of microseconds. And there's a lot of explaining to the customers that it's not the minimum, right? But it's the sort of average latency that you're going to run across.
So what you're talking about,
even the maximum latency.
So what you're talking about is actually a Linux kernel latency, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
And that takes into account all or a number of different latencies.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that the latency number is important to some applications, especially those where the time interval of how quickly you can handle certain actions is of an importance, because the latency might not help, but it might describe the influence on customer application, right?
But still, the worst case is probably more important or more interesting than the best case, right? Because you have to, in doing your work, you have to plan for the worst case latency.
Well, you're falling back into a trap of hard real time versus soft real time, right? Because measuring hard or worst case latency is never going to be possible. You can provide an average latency that you've measured over a certain period of time, but you cannot guarantee that that's going to be the worst case latency.
Aha. And hence is the thinking between a soft real time engineer and a hard real time engineer.
Precisely. So let's talk about the...
Yeah, I know. I threw you off track. There's the other kind of latency we have to look into.
That's why I have my own little list of things that I wanted to mention. So after the interrupt latency comes the duration of interrupt handler, right? So
yeah.
whatever it takes as far as CPU time is concerned to execute code associated with a specific interrupt,
mm-hmm.
after which... there comes scheduler latency, which is time interval from when a task is when the scheduler starts running till when it schedules an actual task to run.
Mm-hmm.
That is really not very specific to a hardware that you run on. I mean, it is from the standpoint of how fast the hardware is. But unlike with the interrupts where you can control some of the behavior by pushing the execution or ISR into bottom half versus executing it within the interrupt context, you don't have that level of control over scheduler latency. And that's something that you get with a specific implementation and... in 2.6 Linux kernel, I think the concept that we want to talk, if not today, then perhaps next time, is the new scheduler implementation.
Well, let's stop for a second, too. And let's just stop for a second, because we brought up the idea of the scheduler thing.
Mm-hmm.
And let's pretend, I have no idea what that is, which is, I probably will have a very difficult time convincing someone of that. But when you're talking about a scheduler, in Linux, a scheduler is the piece of software that picks the thread that runs next. Is that an accurate way of describing that?
That is, yeah, well, it is. It's basically a guardian that has a queue of tasks or a queue of people for comparison that says, you can run now, you stop, you run next.
Mm-hmm. And so what happens is this scheduler is sitting in the kernel, and it's responsible for making sure that tasks are run for some amount of time. And I think what happens, because one of my big mysteries, as I was, is, well, how does a scheduler know when to stop a task from running, right? Because, right, here's my big mystery. I always look at the kind of thing, oh, that's really nice. So it sets something to a runnable state, and it lets it go, and it lets it run. Well,
that's a good point, because there are different times that where scheduler comes into play during the normal execution of Linux kernel, where
mm-hmm.
it looks at the runnable queue. And again, runnable queue is a queue of tasks that are ready to run.
Mm-hmm.
So for the real-time system, it is important for a scheduler to be able to look at the runnable queue quite often, not too often because that might add an overhead, but
mm-hmm.
often enough to really evaluate if there is a higher priority task ready to run in a queue, which would make the scheduler save the context, processor and memory context of the current process,
mm-hmm.
and then start that higher priority task instead.
So inside this scheduler thing, there are certain heuristics for it to figure out what to run next. Mm. And more appropriately, a real-time, let's say a scheduler that's designed for a real-time system will have a different implementation to figure out what runs next. It'll do things a lot different than a system that might be optimized for throughput.
I think that schedulers in general, they all behave in a very similar way. They do have implementation of a specific scheduling algorithm. Uh-huh. There's a round robin algorithm. There's a first in, first out algorithm. So depending on the scheduling policy, what it's called, scheduler mm-hmm. schedules different tasks to run on a CPU. Mm-hmm. So
that's where you get into. There's another implementation out there that I think that was introduced just recently. It was called the Completely Fair Scheduler. Mm-hmm. And there was an article on Kernel Trap, and I was reading that trying to absorb exactly what the Completely Fair Scheduler did compared to, let's say, the standard Linux scheduler.
So let's leave actually the scheduler for one of our next podcasts, because this is a very interesting topic, and I think that we're getting a bit off the main thought of introducing some of the nomenclature for real time. So let's finish up latency first.
Yeah. I know when we were, like I said, in the 5 minutes we prep for our podcast, I know we were talking about not only the scheduler, but one of the attributes about a scheduler that's important is how fast it operates. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things you talked about was scheduler latency and also scheduler overhead. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in a real-time system you want is a minimum scheduler latency and a minimum scheduler overhead. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things that were introduced into the Linux thing was what they call the O1 scheduler. And that's a little bit of terminology that, I don't know, folks that have been out there that done computer science are like, oh yeah, the Lambda thing, I know what about
right.
that. I mean,
yeah.
But what that says for folks that are new to the subject is, O1 means it's constant time. Mm-hmm. So that means the time to pick the next task to run is the same no matter how many tasks there are to run, which is a trick, right? I mean, that is a little bit of a coding trick to make sure that you're not paying a big overhead to figure out what task to run next. And so if you have a system with a bunch of things running, you're not going to run into a lot of scheduler latency or scheduler overhead.
Well, and I think that part of the reason why it's important from user that wants real-time behavior, the O1 scheduler, the constant time approach, is that you can measure the time in constant intervals, meaning you look at all the tasks within the same boundaries. Mm-hmm. You don't have to look at one task that is running in a different time domain versus task B that is running in yet another different time domain, right? Because then scheduling the two would be very non-deterministic.
Yeah.
So O1 scheduler, the constant time scheduling approach, is well very important to real-time applications and users. I think that we talked a bit about the scheduler. Scheduler itself takes some time to schedule a specific task to run,
mm-hmm.
but the sum of interrupt latency, the time interval that it takes to execute the interrupt, the scheduler latency, and the time that it takes to schedule a specific task, that's what most cases or that I've seen is called the kernel latency.
Mm-hmm.
So that time from when an interrupt is raised till when a specific task gets to run in a user space,
mm-hmm.
is called the kernel latency.
Okay.
Because that's the interval of time that your application thread gets delayed by when mm-hmm. an interrupt is raised.
Okay.
Right. So that's something that is you don't have a control of, because interrupts you can't really control when they arrive. That's how they are designed to mm-hmm. be very asynchronous. But they have very much impact on your application when you try to execute something at the highest priority.
Well, that brings us to another little bit of terminology that you hear thrown about, and that's priority inheritance. And that's a classic one, and that has to do with, it's very interesting, and that's some kind of, well, I shouldn't say anything about it, but it's a union between scheduling and priority, that that occurs, and then it's cousin. It has a little cousin there, and its cousin is usually priority inversion.
Mm.
And those two terms, they sort of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I said they're related, but not strictly so. And they have to do with the scheduler picking tasks to run so that high priority tasks are blocked for a minimum amount of time.
Right.
And that concept of a lower priority task blocking a higher priority task is called priority inversion. And there are some...
Well, but on that topic, I'm sorry to interrupt you in the half of your sentence. The priority inversion is not... of a problem itself, but unbounded priority inversion.
Oh, that's probably causes, a better way of saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, causes a bit of hiccup. Yeah.
So you're right. That's good because you're right. I was semi off on the wrong track there because priority inversion is natural.
Yeah.
It's a natural part of a system. The trick is not necessarily not having priority inversion, but minimizing the amount of priority inversion that occurs. And that happens through this technique that's called priority inheritance, that you typically see in real-time systems.
And I think that priority, I mixed the two terms myself.
That's okay.
Priority inversion comes into play, or we've seen actually it messing up with a number of applications in the past because the way people would perceive it in an actual application is that a highest priority thread would never get to run.
Mm-hmm.
It would be what's called starvation, right? Because
yeah.
the highest priority task would never get any of the CPU time because of the lower priority task consuming most of it. And how does it happen? Well, it happens because in most situations, a medium priority task is involved, and medium priority task and low priority task hold the same lock on a specific mutual section
resource.
And medium priority task cannot complete its desired job because low priority task has to first quit the mutual exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And if high priority task is waiting on another resource that medium priority task is holding at the time, that's when you get to that starvation situation.
So I don't mean to be pedantic here, but let's just define for a second priority inversion just so we can get it out on the table.
Uh-huh.
So priority inversion is whenever a higher priority task cannot execute, more appropriately, does not execute because there is a resource, typically, there is a resource contention by a lower priority task.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sort of a type of a race condition, right? For those out there. So it's this race condition where this low priority task is holding on to some resource that a high priority task needs. And as a result, the high priority task can't run. And then, so that's priority inversion.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say the fix, right? But the way of resolving that sort of contention is to do priority inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to let the lower priority task run at the same priority as the waiting task so that it finishes sooner to relinquish that resource.
Right.
And therefore to reduce the amount of time the priority inversion occurs.
Right.
Is that... That's probably the most coherent thing I've said all week.
Pretty good definition, Gene.
Okay.
The unbounded priority inversion happens when higher priority tasks that do not require a resource that a low priority task is holding preempt the lower priority task.
That's true.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the unbounded aspect
situation
comes into
can
play.
Occur.
And that will, of course, defer the execution of highest priority task in the system by that delta time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the things, I guess I just wanted to mention that I know we've been using this generic term called a resource, but most of the time when we've seen these sort of issues in implementation, just to take a second to get out of the definition, but when you see these implementations, you see something like a mutex that or a lot, you know, it's a mutex that a couple different tasks are using for synchronization, so they don't stomp on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's typically where you find that problem. Or there are sometimes where you can have critical sections that that other threads are bouncing into and waiting to enter. And that's where you see those sorts of problems. I know it's something that you deal with a lot. I just wanted to give a good concrete example so people can understand.
Absolutely.
Some folks are a bit more concrete.
Yep. Priority inheritance is one of the protocols that are most desired today by real-time application designers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a value that they want to take benefit of. Before we actually end today's podcast, and again, we are flagged that we're kind of like running out of time, and dear listeners, we don't want to bore you to death with a very, very lengthy podcast, but just wanted to mention some sources of latencies that are most common, because that was our primary topic today. And
I'm sorry, I got off track.
No, it's all good. very often we see latencies show up in a system when interrupts are disabled. If, for example, a new device driver is written for a new device, and within the scope of a device driver, interrupts are disabled and then enabled, it's basically kind of like turning off and on the time counting inside the Linux kernel, which means that all the threads that rely on that time counting and rely on scheduler to preempt at appropriate times, all those actions are never going to happen.
Ah, so, because one of the important things, I guess, to bring up is that Linux does generate a scheduler interrupt, right? So it gets back to my thing I think I got distracted on, and maybe it actually segue, is that the scheduler itself is interrupt-driven, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a interrupt that's raised in order for the scheduler to begin executing to interrupt whatever's currently running out in user land and to pick the next thing. And you're right. I mean, people will vary. I think it's more out of old practice, won't think that they're actually stopping the system nearly completely while they're doing that interrupt disabling. And so if, you know, it's good, I guess, if you're doing beginning development, but the key is to be respectful of what's going on and to only mask the interrupts that you don't want called opposed to all of them. I mean, you can do that if you want. It's definitely your system. But you shouldn't if you really care or real time is important to you.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. I think that really we are running out of time, and I'm looking at my list, and we have at least five or six more areas of that we can talk about as sources for latency. So why don't we just leave this particular topic for the next podcast and start with that next time.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for your attention. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know. We are very much interested in your opinion. Send us emails to podcast@timesys.com.
Yeah, we get a ton of emails after every podcast, and we try to do our best to respond. Let us know. I think they redesigned our webpage, and before there used to be a link at the bottom you could click on and leave your comments, and we found that people preferred to send us email opposed to send comments. Mm-hmm. That's not there anymore. If you feel the urge to do it that way, you have to send us email now.
We understand that the topic that we're tackling right now is a bit complex. And so as we go through it, and it's going to take us probably two or three podcasts to really cover areas that we want, please do let us know what interests you around real time in particular, and we'll make sure to cover that during one of our podcasts.
Yeah, that would be really helpful, because I know we can talk about what we did from customer experience and our own time doing engineering and whatever else, but none of that is as helpful as someone letting us know what they're trying to tackle to give us their perspective on what they find important. So by all means, drop us a line at podcast@timesys.com, and we'll do our best to talk to what you're working on. So, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Check out our new site to get free code, discuss, and learn about embedded Linux development. Go to timesys.com today.